Ladies and gentlemen, it is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, broadcasting live from the incestuous Island Chains Nation in the legal ramification isle in the Southern Pacific Ocean, enslaved by legal means. You gotta love that, Shiite Muslim. And my very special guest is Vince Seymour, an American who has more patriotism for New Zealand than most New Zealanders will ever come up with in their meager existence. Vince, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Vinny. Thank you. And by the way, I'm a New Zealand citizen and proud of it.
Yeah, so there you go. There you go. And you remind me of Kim.com in that way, because he's really, really sticking it to the government and exposing a lot of their scumbaggery. And he wasn't born here. And I think that's actually, it's even better when somebody has patriotism for a country where they haven't been born, where they've been naturalized into, because it shows that they really have taken it on board and decide to love it. I don't know. That's my perspective either. I kind of consider myself almost like a forgotten son of the United States to a large degree. You know, there's a whole bunch of scum over there running the country, and I'm really upset about it, and I'm fighting for the people of the United States. And then at the end of the day, I'm 10,000 clicks away.
In the Vietnam sense of the word. You're an astute observer of the world situation.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of the world situation, speaking specifically about New Zealand, you're pretty much the preeminent watchdog on judicial corruption in New Zealand. Now, I haven't had you on the show for a while now. I'm just wondering, what's new on your dance card?
Oh, well, quite a bit, but it's hard to juggle it all at the moment because I've just come out of a 8-day trial against the police. This relates to the raid on my house in 2008, and that was quite enlightening. The detective superintendent, Andrew Lovelock, for Auckland, actually caught lying on the stand, had to be stood down, and after we closed our case, he came up with this 3-month-old employee with the police college down in Wellington that tried to explain how he could, how the documents he had could get altered. They blamed it ultimately on a computer glitch, which is quite funny to see it unfolding. he should be charged criminally, but because it was a civil proceeding, I don't think that'll happen.
Mm. Well, I think somebody posted an interesting picture on my wall. It says, since 1968, 1,433 people have been killed by the New Zealand police. Not one of those police has ever been fired.
Yeah, it's a sad joke, really, and it's sad commentary. We just don't apparently care enough to hold these police accountable for what they do. And, of course, the courts have no stomach for it. They always side with the police, and that's unfortunate. It's a very incestuous club we have. It's hard to get through.
Yeah, yeah. So the way I figure it, there's the structure of how New Zealand remains enslaved. So up top, you've got whoever's really running the show, usually the bankers, they're the ones who provide all the money. And down below, there's their henchmen, the politicians who set all the unlawful policy against us. Down below them, there is the judiciary, which okays and signs off and ensures that nobody gets out of this just us system. And then just down below them, you have the police and various other bureaucrats who come at you and bring you into it. It's sort of like they drag you in kicking and screaming into this unlawful system, in some cases literally.
Well, I disagree with you only on the point that the politicians I find are grist for the mill.
The what?
We really are run by they really are fodder. They're dispensable. What I notice in my observations is that the bureaucracy, which includes the judicial, we really live under a judicial oligarchy, and that's controlled, as you said, by the banks and some very powerful families in New Zealand. And it's very hard to get justice in that environment, and of course, it's made worse by the fact that many of the court proceedings are secret. The courts tell us, and we tend to believe it, I don't, but the public at large, that this protects privacy and it's necessary to do justice correctly. But, of course, it's not the case. It just protects special interests.
It protects criminality, in other words.
It can do. In fact, it often protects criminality.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this this rule as I do, that if it comes from officialdom, whatever they're saying it is probably the direct opposite? So if they're saying we're doing it for your own good, it means they're doing it for their own good?
Well, I'm not that cynical, but I do recognize that that's often the case. I mean, look at this Transparency International New Zealand, or Transparency International, the CPI out this week, which is a perception index, which says that New Zealand is lowest corruption in the world as far as perception goes. Well, that's such a load of malarkey. And what I notice is that the government funds 92% of the local chapter's budget, and it's all comprised of feather-nesting bureaucrats and government contractors. It's incredible. In fact, I wrote an article that I posted last week on Kiwis First. It's called A Letter to Mugabe, and it tells Robert Mugabe how to get better image in the world of this country. And all he has to do to start with is fund the local chapter of Transparency International, as New Zealand does.
It's really funny you should say that, because I mentioned on the radio about this Transparency International Perception Index. First of all, it's called a Perception Index because if it was anything but perception, it could be called the Reality Index. But I said, New Zealand is so corrupt, we may as well be getting run by Robert Mugabe.
Well, he hasn't cotton on to how it's done. He needs to take a lesson from the New Zealand government. It only costs the New Zealand government $500,000 a year, so it's a great propaganda value for what they get. And it's just incredible. I went to the AGM a couple weeks ago down in Wellington, and it was a hug fest of all these feather-nesting bureaucrats talking about how they're increasing each other's business based on the trade that's going to increase with New Zealand because of the perception that it has low corruption. In fact, they all marketed. They had Dame Sylvia Cartwright, who was speaking about being a judge in Cambodia. What was interesting, when she got through talking about how the prime minister of Cambodia gets all the contracts for his mates, one of the directors from Transparency International follows her up by talking about how the last time he was in the Ministry of Justice in Cambodia. And I realized that all these directors of the local chapter are going over to Cambodia, and not only going to visit, but going in. It turns out that Sylvia's mates are not getting the contracts like she had hoped. It's this corrupt prime minister. The irony wasn't lost on me and several others in the group that were in independent. But it just shows how thick some of these people are, how perverted their minds are as far as what is corruption. We call it just watching out for your mate. But, of course, in according to Sylvia Cartwright, what the prime minister is doing is over there while he's protecting his mates is corrupt. So it's just according to New Zealand standards, which side of the fence you're looking from, not which side of the fence you're on.
So if you're in New Zealand and you're giving all the private contracts to your mates, it's not corrupt. But if you're in Cambodia and you're giving all the private contracts to your mate, it is corrupt, right?
Well, it is for Cambodians to do it. It's not for Sylvia Cartwright, who's a temporary judge over there, to do it for her mates. Of course, she can't do it because she's finding it harder to do that. It's just incredible. I'm astounded. Another telling aspect of the AGM was after Judith Collins was through speaking, she was congratulated by the former banking ombudsman, Liz Brown, who congratulated the government. And actually said, isn't it interesting that our organization, which can be the bane of governments worldwide, has such a great working relationship with the New Zealand government? And it was so bald-faced that even Judith Collins, as thick as a skin as she has, was embarrassed. I mean, she could see it being, she wants the cooperation, and of course they fund this organization, so they're going to get it. But to sit there and be congratulated by this organization was a little bit too much, and she saw that.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I've got this this theory that once you get into high office, you sort of lose your empathy somewhat. You stop actually caring about people properly. And that's the only way you can survive, actually, in that environment, is if you don't actually give a frack about anybody. You know? Have you noticed that? You see,
oh, absolutely.
John Key and Judith Collins and Jerry Brownlee and all of these, even some of the leaders of the opposition, you see them being just blatantly callous, not caring about any criticism, not caring about who they hurt, how they destroy the country whatsoever. It's like their conscience was surgically removed at parliamentary induction so that they could do their job diligently.
You are absolutely correct, and it does disintegrate with time. What I notice, and what a lot of lawyers notice, and it's quite commonly expressed in private functions, is that when lawyers are appointed judges, if you're lucky enough to get them in the first couple of years, they generally give just verdicts. Over time, they all fall back to where they don't care. They no longer rule in accordance to law with law. They no longer try to be just. It's a whole mockery. And of course, they walk all these cloistered halls of the courts with judges. So they don't rise to the nobility of the appointment. They actually become corrupt, like the ones that they appoint next to, even if they're not that way when they're appointed.
Well, the analogy would be very similar to and I've said this many times before, a good apple and a bad barrel. And I think this happened to me personally in the working world, actually, because I didn't like what I was doing in the working world, like really, really hated it. I started to hate everything else at the same time, because the reality was I actually just hated myself. And so in order to forget about the fact that I hated myself, I put it onto other people. That's what I couldn't keep doing. That's why I had to stop working for other people like that, is because I knew that I'd become one of them. And I think that might be the judge's problem, too.
Well, I do observe that the corruption actually has a very detrimental effect on people generally. And people generally react like you do, or they just go into seclusion, or they become very angry. Ultimately, it's very difficult. When the public perception of the sheep in New Zealand is that it's not corrupt, when you see that, and you've grown up with believing that, and you see actually how corrupt it is, it's hard to reconcile that and your conscience. And I think you've gone through that same thing. I know I did.
Well, I think that whole reconciliation process is something that we've kind of got to... I think maybe part of this reason is that you feel powerless, right? And I think that's what really frustrates people. That's what really makes them angry. That's what really makes them depressed, is because they realize that they can't change things, right? People like us, on the other hand, we do things that are completely outside the box in terms of most people's general scope of thinking, yet we're actually being successful and gaining traction at the same time. That way, we don't continue to foster this sort of growing bitterness and anger that from eating away at us, because we're actually doing something about this authority that we don't like.
Oh, I find that. I find that even though it's pretty much pissing in the wind, that you do have small victories, and it is a public education process. You can't expect victories in a corrupt system. All you can do is like what you're doing with the radio show and educating the public actually what's going on here. That's all we all can do. I mean, in little bits, we have no power, as you said, to actually change the system. And there's a lot of corruption is actually currency here. Actually, telling the government, issuing the propaganda and the public actually spreading it seems to have currency and spreading it around the world that we aren't corrupt, because that's a sense of pride, even though it's false. And like you said, quite correctly, the perception is very different from the reality. There seems to be a misplaced pride, but a pride nonetheless in this false image of, of what we have. And of course, you see it here with John Banks now, politician. It's much, much worse with the... When was the last time you saw a judge up on charges? In fact, it's never happened in New Zealand. They're protected quite quite
thoroughly.
Well. Yeah, thoroughly. Now, the case with Banks, of course, he was protected quite well, too, by the system. The system wouldn't do anything. It took a pensioner working on an $80 computer to prosecute this leader of a major political party in New Zealand.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. The fact that it's all it took is amazingly awesome.
Yeah. Well, but keep in mind that the police and the Crown for years refused to prosecute him. I mean, isn't that an embarrassment? Shouldn't we be hanging our heads in shame that this pensioner has to bring him to court? It's crazy. I mean, it's an upside-down system now. Now, of course, if you and I don't pay a traffic ticket, we could face prison if we refuse to pay the fines and the court costs. It's just there's two sets of laws here. Well, one set of laws, but how it's applied is the biggest criminals in New Zealand get a free pass on the system.
Yeah.
And
Can I illustrate something here? Because I was just thinking about this yesterday. The legal system and the whole idea that we've got, instead of having the law of the jungle, like actually having a system whereby there's no vigilante justice or anything like that, would actually be really awesome. It would be great if it actually followed its own rules. But it doesn't. And that's why the system's
so free. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Any rule would be preferable to what we have now if they were followed, as that's what's not being followed.
Yeah, and that's the source of my frustration, I think. It's just like, I have to follow your rules, but you don't, you know? I remember a friend of my mother's, you know, got into his truck on Waiheke Island one time, sipped with a bottle of scotch, and he says, "Don't drink and drive, kids." We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about sitting in Parliament. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with frickin' John Key. Actually, it's more like corrupt scumbags to the left, sociopaths to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with the Speaker of the House, who prevents anybody from actually criticising the government. All right, Vince Seamus, my very special guest from KiwisFirst.co.nz or KiwisFirst.com. And you've gotten some replies, haven't you? Some emails from Transparency International. We're going to come up with some kind of a joke name, you know, some sort of an ironic titlehood for Transparency International. I don't know. I'm a wordsmith. I'll come up with something soon enough. But anyway.
You talk about John Key. He actually told his caucus a few years ago that while corruption in the courts has been identified to him, he doesn't want his... MPs to mention it because, in his words, he didn't want to go there because if they do, people will lose faith in the judiciary. So here's a prime minister who's quite keen to cover it up in order to maintain that perception. He knows how bad it is.
Yeah, well, he knows how bad it is because he probably benefits from it, you know.
Oh, yeah, he's probably bad, isn't
he? I mean, have a look at the Russell Malcolm case, for example. Tried to expose massive corruption at a council, and then John Key personally dictates his bail conditions that he can't even contact MPs or anything like that, and has his business shut down, gets him kicked out of his home, and all of that kind of stuff. You can't do that unless you've got a corrupt judiciary to enforce your will.
Oh, it's incredible. In fact, his case is very similar to mine, except the raid on my house was a little bit more over the top. Mm. I actually had 12 cops who came in at 7 a.m. and spent 6 hours tearing everything apart. It was entirely a fishing expedition. But when you talk to these cops, what they were, in fact, we cross-examined all of them in court a couple weeks ago. When you ask them what they were searching for, they said documents, anything. Some of them were pulling out contacts, computer contacts with politicians. And we asked them, well, is that your understanding that the search warrant, you were looking for any contacts I had with politicians, and they said yes. Well, that showed how unlawful their warrant was, and in fact, they didn't do themselves any good with their testimony. But this is so common in New Zealand. In fact, this little police station up the road from me executes 100 search warrants a year, so a couple a week. And this is it's not a drug-infested dealing area. In fact, very, very low crime, relatively speaking, nationwide. When you consider that, in fact, I have an Official Information Act request in for the minister to the Ministry of Justice now for 2 months. They haven't answered me yet on how many search warrants are conducted a year. Russell Malcolm Russell had the same experience that we had. Yeah, Malcolm Russell had the same experience we had.
It's actually the other way around.
I hope he does follow through with it.
Yeah, it's Russell Malcolm. Yeah. It's very hard when people have two first names.
It is hard, isn't it?
Yeah. And in fact, I had this idea, and I want to run this by you. Okay. If we were to say, I don't know, get me elected as the Prime Minister, you know, just theoretically speaking. And I do my three acts of Parliament and then I leave. The first act is to change the office of the Prime Minister to the office of the Prime Sinister, so that everybody elected after me will have to be called Sinister. And then secondly would be I'll ram through under urgency with no democratic accountability whatsoever, the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, which would create a government department to be staffed by volunteers from the community to investigate and prosecute corruption within the government and within corporations operating inside New Zealand. Okay, so the problem is the first thing you'd have to do is actually clean out the court system. Like, that would be target number one. So that way you can then use that clean system to prosecute other corrupt government officials, corrupt corporations that are operating within New Zealand. And the third act that I would do as the Prime Minister would be to pass the Suppression of Any Further Legislation Act, which would stop any more laws being passed to encroach upon people's freedoms, and there would be a clause in it that has an opt-out for laws that currently require your consent. So anything that's not falling under common law, i.e. hurting people, damaging their personal private property, or stealing it, you know, that kind of thing, anything outside of that is a consensual law and you can just opt out, you know? I think that would probably make a huge dent in the problems that we're facing in this country. But I'll never get elected Prime Minister, though, you know, because I'm just too freaking out there.
Yeah, well, too frank in your opinion, you got to hide your agenda. You got, you know, like the politicians do routinely, and the bureaucrats, many of them.
Here's an idea. How about I go out and I tell people that I'm going to do the direct opposite of what I'm planning to do. So I come up and say, vote for me, everybody. I'm going to sell the country's assets. I'm going to increase police power so that you don't have any rights. I'm going to sign trade deals which put the country under the control of foreign corporations. I'm going to cover up judicial corruption, uproot well-established New Zealand communities and sell them out to Chinese investors, allow oil drilling off of the coast, and I'm also going to sign us up to foreign military packs so that they can have control of all our armed forces and send our boys over to die for somebody else's behest. Vote for me. I guarantee you, it wouldn't lie a frickin' landslide, because it's worked so far, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. Your journalism is quite unique for New Zealand, just because there's really no investigative mainstream journalism, because there's an independent reporter, what's his name, Brian Bruce, who's done did that huge child poverty in New
Sorry,
Zealand.
You're breaking up there a little bit. Brian Bruce did what?
And that, of course, after he did that, John Key appointed his mate in charge of programming at TVNZ.
Hold on a second.
That was quite revealing of how...
You cut out a little bit there where you said Brian Bruce did something. What was it that he did?
Well, he's an independent TV producer. And what he did is he did this series on child poverty in New Zealand, which was quite damning of the government policies. I don't know if you heard about that, but after he did that, John Key appointed his mate in charge of programming at TVNZ to make sure he didn't get any further funding, which continues to this day. Oh, my friend Penny Bryce says, you just can't make this stuff up. Anybody who exposes anything that the government doesn't like, they just don't get funding. And that's just what it comes down to. Obviously, you're not getting government funding.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think with politicians and the plan for the country, it pays to do it, perceive it as a hurricane, to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And unfortunately, the best never comes.
Mm.
But you're very glad that you planned, at least.
We all remain hopeful. Yeah. Let me read this, what I got to... from Transparency International today. This is an email that came through to me. Now, I emailed the German parent a couple weeks ago, and the person responded that she would get back to me in a little time. Now, this is what she says today. Now, I was complaining about this managing director, whatever she is, of this primary director of Transparency International New Zealand, which is an incorporated society, so it's Inc. is the name of it. And her name is Suzanne Snively, and she runs a company called More Media, which contracts to the government, not surprisingly. Well, she's also on her LinkedIn site, has herself listed as the chairman or chief executive of this company called Transparency International New Zealand Limited. Well, I looked it up. It's a non-existent company. Myself as a consultant on a company to help trade with New Zealand, international trade with New Zealand, on the basis that New Zealand has low corruption and offers trading partners great opportunities. Now, so I complained about that to the international parent, and I had two things. I want to know what their policy is on government funding of local chapters and whether they considered it to be within their guidelines for someone who's involved with the organization, this non-government organization, nonprofit, to actually be trading on the name for personal gain. Now, this is a response. And I said that, and to boot, it's a fictitious company. So they she responded to me today. This is Catherine Decker, Frau Catherine Decker in Germany. Thank you very much for drawing our attention about the question of Transparency International New Zealand Limited. This indeed does not exist. So she accepts the company does not exist. And Mrs. Snively has updated her link page. She said, I hope this information is helpful and answers your questions. So, of course, it does answer the question that she's running a fictitious company, but it doesn't answer the question of whether that's okay for someone involved in this organization to be doing.
Yeah. See, so now this is another point that occurred to me just yesterday, Vince, is that, you know, you see a problem. You went onto LinkedIn and you saw this little problem here, and then you send a request away, and you try to look at it a little further, right? Mm. So many other people must have seen that and not asked the question. And this is something that I want every member of this audience to know. You are the one who can make a difference. So long as you see something, do something, all right? It's like Dianne Feinstein with the Big Sis, you know. See something, say something. Here's Big Vinny. See scumbaggery? Expose scumbaggery, all right? If you're not exposing the scumbaggery, it will take over your country and eventually your life as well, you know? It's quite a sad phenomenon because people just don't want to take personal responsibility. They think, oh, somebody else will do it. Nobody else is going to do it, okay? Nobody else has. Yeah. Nobody else will until you take personal responsibility for it.
Apathy is pervasive. But, you know, it's, as you experienced with Auckland Council, I've seen it myself up here at Rodney, up until a couple of years ago, they virtually had a sign on the door what the bribing regime was. It was so corrupted. It was incredible. Everybody knew about it. But, of course, this local organization of Transparency International New Zealand won't expose it. In fact, I tried to find out what this organization was doing. So earlier this year, I looked online, and it's an incorporated society that's supposed to have the rules listed on the Incorporated Society's website. Well, it wasn't on there. So I called up Susan Snyder, and I said, why aren't your rules up on the, you know, it's a legal requirement. You're in breach of the law. And she responded, oh, it's because I've only been with the group for 9 months, and I guess the other people before me were incompetent. I said, well, you haven't done anything in 9 months. And she said, well, I didn't know about it. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. So within a week, they had the rules up. Now, here's one of the rules. And keep in mind that if you go on it's going to be funny. When you look at their website, I've got to find it here on the article here.
I love that. And the title, I've only been here 9 months. You've had enough time to gestate a fetus, lady. You can certainly do a page with some rules, for frack's sake.
Yeah, exactly. So now keep in mind that Transparency International organization exists to fight corruption. In fact, their slogan was, and I think they've just now changed it, but corruption ruins lives. And they go on to say that people who fight corruption should not fight it alone. We exist to support those people and to expose corruption where it exists. Now, that's their international slogan. Now, this is funny. The local chapter's rules say this, and honest to God, you can't make this stuff up. The rules state the overarching principles that the society must comply with are that the society will not be involved in investigating or exposing individual cases. Isn't that incredible?
So our job is to expose individual cases, but our rule says we're not allowed to.
not allowed to. The overarching, in other words, the most important thing to this organization is to not expose it. How incredible can you... And people...
Oh my God!
People wonder how the perception can be that we're low to start a close, and they'd be too busy.
Oh my God! Yeah, because I was going to ask, you know, they're kind of like the Cancer Society. So, how many cancer cures have you come up to? None. How
many come in the big ring?
Oh, ever. So, how come you're the Cancer Society?
It's like these people are so same principle, same scumbaggery. Put back up the ring.
Thank you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment today with my very special guest, Vince Seymour. We're running through these, quite frankly, I'm going to have to put some of these in a comedy act or something like that, Vince, because these are just brilliant, brilliant. Okay. You've got more emails to read out, don't you?
I picked this up off the wall. I was at the AGM, as I mentioned, of this Transparency International New Zealand in November, where Judith Collins spoke and Sylvia Cartwright. And this came off the wall. This is the roll of honor, the advisory group members to this organization. They're all government. I'll read through a couple of them. Gabriel Muckluff, Secretary to the Treasury. General Reese Jones, Chief of Defense. Parlene Winter, Chief Executive of the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs, Naomi Ferguson, Commissioner for Inland Revenue, Martin Matthews, Secretary for Transport, Lynn Provost, Auditor General, Keith Munch, Chief Executive and Director of Maritime New Zealand, Ian Rennie, State Services Commissioner. It goes on and on and on. Andrew Bridgman, Secretary for Justice. It's all government. Alistair Morrison, Director General for the Department of Conservation. It's just incredible.
So if it's
this
land,
organization is just a government mouthpiece.
Yeah. And I think this is part of the Agenda 21 protocols as well, is to use private organizations more or less as a front for the government to push the government's agenda and have them working as one.
Yeah, but who can be more effective than New Zealand? Come on, we got to give ourselves a hand because we're really good at this. I mean, it's absolutely every facet of government. And this is supposedly a non-governmental organization, non-profit. Well, it's more government than any government organization. It's just, it's a farce. And we should accept
I've never
it
seen
for being
that
a farce.
Many.
Yeah. How do you get all those government officials in one room? This is their advisory members. It's unbelievable. And this is the question that the international parent will not answer. I asked them twice now. What is your policy on government funding and government control of your local chapter? Because they're supposed to exist to hold governments accountable and expose corruption. We have a local chapter that's controlled by the government and says in their rules that they don't expose corruption. So, come on, how does this work? And, of course, we have the lowest corruption in the world. Go figure. As I said before, Robert Mugabe needs to learn how we do it so he can improve the fortunes of the perception of his country.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, that was a point that I made, is it's not that New Zealand's not corrupt at all, it's that it's so corrupt that anybody who would ever expose any of the corruption is corrupt themselves already.
Yeah, when I tell people this, they find it incredible. In fact, they don't want to believe me. Of course, as I've just read to you, I'm reading you off the sheet of a list that came from their function.
Yeah, well, see, I'm different.
Making this up, and people's eyes don't believe them.
Yeah, see, I'm a tad different because I know that the corruption's going on already. It was really hard to accept in the first place, you know. I loved the idea of voting and loved the idea of obeying police and doing what was lawful and whatnot. And then I realized it was all BS. And then the cynicism sunk in, and I still haven't managed to get rid of it.
It's tough. I still have struggle with it. It took me a long time to accept it. And it took me a long time, and I'm staring at the face of it. And I can understand the public's ignorance of how corrupt it is. And of course, we hear the messages every day about how low corruption is in New Zealand. And so we tend to believe what we're told, and we've grown up like that. So it's very hard to live in a society where what you're told by the government is very, very different from the reality. And, of course, we don't have the independent reporters other than you, it's just a small group, that are actually exposing it. And anybody who does it mainstream gets chopped off at the knees. And they learn the lesson very quick that if they're going to be working and earning money, that they have to play along with the government here. We're only a country with 4 million people. There's not a lot of place to go.
Well, I'm starting to get kind of
attacked by the government, as Brian Bruce has been done over this channel.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little bit angry recently, Vince. And there's this culture in Ireland where you can walk into a pub anywhere. It doesn't matter whether you're rich, famous, politician, whatever. People will give you crap about it. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not this gobshite again. And I was just thinking, it's a very small town type of mentality. And we don't share that mentality per se in this country. So what if it was publicly and socially acceptable to accost politicians in the street while they're minding their own business at a cafe or something and call them a scumbag or ask them why they're doing such and such or why they're not uncovering corruption in the system and whatnot? I would love a day when that kind of thing is socially acceptable, because normally you get a whole bunch of their little cronies and stuff trying to hustle you away, or they just walk away from you. You know, they're afraid. They're like cockroaches scuttling under the couch.
Oh, terrible! I mean, in fact, we have the opposite situation here. If you go up and call somebody a name, you just committed a criminal offense, according to some of these courts. Use the case of myself and Grace Hayden on totally different fronts. Grace was exposing corruption at Waitakere City Council. I was exposing corruption in the courts. We were both found guilty of defamation and damages, a huge sum. In my case, $1 million. In her case, I've been already. What she's saying and what I'm saying is 100% correct. We've got the evidence to prove it. But do we get a trial? I mean, forget about the fair trial. They can do a show trial, but they won't even let us in court. Both were convicted without being allowed to defend ourselves. Now, what kind of system is that? This happens all the time. In fact, in the police trial, we were suing the police for a couple hundred thousand, and the Crown Counsel actually said, well, you can't sue New Zealand for a tort in law, which means a wrong in law committed by a public official, for that sum of money. The courts have always said in the case of torts, the awards are nominal or modest, in a $10,000 to $20,000 range. And, of course, the Crown Counsel had to say, but the exception is defamation, which can run a half a million to $1 million. Now, how do you reconcile the two? I reconcile it this way. The reality in New Zealand is that you can't expose corruption and you get done for defamation. It's a way of silencing people. The huge awards of defamation, which are disproportionate in our society, are done to silence people. People don't come out and say anything. You said before, well, people don't want to be bothered, and a lot of that is true. The apathy runs deep here. But I find also that people are afraid to. They see the people who have been exposing corruption and get no support. In fact, they get attacked, have their houses taken from it, they're bankrupted, they lose everything. And that sends a message to the public at large that you don't expose powerful people in New Zealand because you get done. And, you know, in the case of Grace Hayden, she's exposed this politician lawyer who was running a private charitable trust, which didn't exist, and he was taking diversions on animal control fees into his private trust. So everything he was doing was illegal because he was working for the council as well. It's absolute corruption at the core. It's criminal act. She exposed that. She provides the evidence to the court. He files a defamation suit and then gets an order from the court that she's not allowed to defend herself. And he was into court saying, oh, she's hurt my feelings by calling me a scumbag. And he wins the defamation case against her. So, yeah, when you say, well, wouldn't it be nice to be able to walk up to somebody at a table and call them a scumbag because they are, you can't do that in New Zealand. I mean, we are told we have freedom of expression, but heaven forbid if you should exercise it. Even if you're 100% correct, you get there's a heavy price in our society to pay. In fact, I say often the difference between New Zealand and bureaucrats and the mafia is that the bureaucrats haven't learned how to kill people yet, or maybe they have, and we just haven't heard about it. So there must be they've learned that they're very effective at incapacitating them through other means, like financially stripping them of every financial, and in the case of me, four times in prison for short stints for things I've published.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what was occurring to me there, you know, the Bob Marley song, I Shot the Sheriff? Sheriff John Brown always hated me for what? I don't know. Every time I plant a seed, he says, kill them before they grow. And I think this is what is happening to activists like yourself and Grace, is the Sheriff John Key is saying, kill them before they grow, before a movement comes around behind them, before they're not capable of being just taken out, you know? That's the thing. If you've got a big, massive movement behind you and public awareness, it becomes that more difficult to attack and destroy you, you know? I mean, take Julian Assange or any of these other whistleblowers and WikiLeaks and what have you. It's very, very difficult to keep doing things to them because the public always sees you doing it. And that's part of what I do, you know, is try and give a little public awareness to plights like yours and many others as well. Vince Seymour, KiwisFirst.com. Ladies and gentlemen, check out the website if you're interested in New Zealand judicial corruption, or if you're a lawyer and you want a job in the corrupt judiciary, you'll be good. You'll be good there too. All right. You've got to know the rules first, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime. Thanks for listening.